Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We are broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. Today I'm happy to be able to bring you the conversation that I'd hoped to let you hear a few weeks ago between Morag Gamble and Helena Norberg Hodge. I've got that all organised to play for you today, so I hope you enjoy it. It's on the topic of localisation. Helena Norberg Hodge is a linguist, an author and a filmmaker, and a visionary leader and pioneer in the new economy movement, founder of Local Futures and convener of World Localisation Day. She champions community resilience and the revitalisation of traditional wisdom. She wrote a book, Ancient Futures, Learning from Ladakh, and made an award-winning documentary, The Economics of Happiness. And both of these have inspired global localisation movements. The conversation was recorded during the online permaculture festival, the Festival of Wild and Kind Ideas, which took place over 6 days. You can get free access to all the recordings of the festival on the Permaculture Education Institute website, or you can just Google the International Festival of Wild and Kind Ideas. And here's Morag introducing Helena.
Hello and welcome back to the International Festival of Wild and Kind Ideas. Our next guest is Helena Norberg Hodge. Welcome to our festival. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Where are you at the moment? Are you still in Spain?
Yes, I'm in Spain.
But Helena is the founder of Local Futures, the founder of the World Localization Day Initiative. She's a Goy Peace Prize winner, a Right Livelihood Award winner, co-founder of the Global Eco-Village Network, and the International Forum on Globalization, has been working for decades as an activist, as an educator, an author, a filmmaker, really at the forefront of speaking up, a pioneer of the localization movement worldwide. And so perhaps we can start there, Helena. Why did you land on localization as one of those core messages that you feel kind of helps to bring forward the change we need to see in the world?
Well, I think it was because I had been so globalized. I am Swedish, but English, German, had lived in America, France, traveled a lot, and then I was invited out to this part of Tibet called Ladakh, which had not been affected by the modern world. And I discovered that in that world, which hadn't been globalized, first of all, people had much more time. There was time to look after your children, to look after the land, to build houses, to sing, to dance, to look after yourself, to meditate. No shortage of time whatsoever. And so I saw how mothers already, you know, with a baby in the womb, there was no stress, there was no pressure. And I realized it was because they hadn't been globalized. They had their own local economy. And they because of that, not only had plenty of time, but they had the ability to be so creative and to be competent in so many different areas, you know, to develop skills, multiple skills, to use their bodies mm-hmm. on a daily basis, which we often look at, you know, from afar, and we think, oh, that must be hard. But now we know that sitting is the same as smoking, and that actually using our bodies really works well. And yeah, everybody sang together. Everybody had a sense that they were able, as unique individuals, to be respected, to be loved. There was a sense of connection, and that was all to do with having a more localized economy. Now, it took me a few years to be so clear about the local versus the global. In the beginning, it was clear that we needed decentralized development, and I was influenced by Schumacher, who wrote Small is Beautiful. I was influenced by the idea that we need more human scale, and that we, and as I say, that we need to be able to move more slowly through the world. That's
where it came there's from. Something. There's something particularly about the pace of life in Ladakh that also struck me when I came to volunteer with you. Well, back in the 90s in Ladakh, in 92 and 95, I think it was. And the experience there transformed my life too, that sense of deep connection to place, to community, that there was everyone knew how to build their own houses, their beautiful big mud brick houses, and the natural clothing and the natural food and the water-powered stone mills and the songs that you could hear up and down the valley, and just be able to hold that piece of bread in your hand that had come from the fields of nine grains and ground by this stone mill, one grain at a time, mixed with the yak yogurt to make this bread. Like, when you hold that, the something in your mind just flips, because, you know, in the West we're trained to go and get a job, and I know how to, you know, go to work, buy the bread, and I held this piece of bread and my mind exploded. And I know you've spoken about this before, but just as a continuing of this particular thread of conversation, when you brought the women from Ladakh to the West, what did they tell you about how they noticed life in the West? Because in Ladakh, you know, often they're sort of young guys in particular are wanting to live that way, and they're sort of looking to the West going, that's the goal. What did the women say? What did the women elders say when they saw actually what's going on?
Well, the women elders, it was particularly wonderful to be with them when they came back, and we would have village meetings and they report what they had seen. And one of the things that was how they just laughed at the way we would make such a fuss when someone was coming to visit. It was like this fuss, and they didn't have enough sheets, and, you know, it was like, and we have, you know, all this space, you know, we can have dozens of people come to visit us. And they were also shocked by the fact that people were living right next to each other and didn't know each other's names. Mm-hmm. And also very aware of the time pressures and the rushing. But, you know, it's not like the boys inherently were longing to be in the West. You know, I experience how the Western system is this 24/7 warfare, psychological warfare against land-based people. And the first to react to it are the men. They're more attracted by the speed of the, you know, getting on a motorbike and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, we also sponsored community leaders from Ladakh and Bhutan and other countries as well to come to the West, including men. And that's one of the most important things that could still happen, is both that cultural exchange, both ways, between so-called poor countries and rich countries, and also the deeper dialogue and connection that we could also do online, as we're doing now. But really need to be aware of this psychological pressure and realize that even in the West, even in Australia, you know, people who farmed all their life tend to feel that they're not as clever and not as successful as people in the city, because our economic system marginalizes that work and, you know, turns it into better work.
Yeah. So after realizing these things, how did you begin to translate this into what we can do differently in the West? Because, you know, it's one thing noticing it there when it's where it's possible and to talk about, you know, the imposition of Western culture there, but how do we begin to sort of disentangle this really knotted way of life here? How did you find your way into doing that? How did we unstick?
Well, I almost immediately, after I'd been out there for 2 years, speaking the language fluently and becoming so aware. I mean, this is not something that I was making up. You know, I was literally seeing as this Western system came in, which in the beginning I used to think was Western culture and Westernization. Later on, I came to realize it wasn't actually Western. It was had already morphed into a global system of a sort of corporate empire that was imposing a similar trend, even in my native country of Sweden and all over the world. And the trends were all to drive people away from the land. So destroying farming, both through that psychological warfare, but also through hidden subsidies, taxes, and regulations that all favored the global, favored basically the Walmartization of the food economy and distorted all the prices. So something would come in from the other side of the world, costing less than something from a mile away. So as I became aware of that, I just wanted more than anything to share it. So my work has always been about trying to let people know about what's going on, so that they themselves can then decide what to do. And, you know, I'm not telling people what to do, whether in Ladakh or Bhutan or in the West. I'm just saying, let's really be aware of this. And when we are, you know, most of us are going to want to protect, fundamentally protect the community fabric. And everything you need depends on money. And you have no idea who is driving that marketplace, what the price of bread is going to be tomorrow. You are naturally going to hoard money. So I, you know, back then and now, my work is a lot about explaining this isn't about values. This is about understanding what's going on. And so it's not a value shift we need, because I actually see most people value good relationships. On their deathbed, they all talk about their friendships, their family relationship. So anyway, my work really became raising awareness, and it was so clear that food and farming were absolutely central in driving the destruction. And so I became a proponent of local food economies. And I'm so happy, even though I don't necessarily get any sort of recognition for it, you know, I know that even in Los Angeles and in Melbourne, actually, and in so many places in the world, many, more than 20 countries, I help to get the ideas going and to get the initiatives started to start the new farmers markets and community-supported agriculture and to strengthen permaculture and all of these deep land-based and community-based efforts, the eco-villages and so on. So that was the main thing, was educational. And then that included films, it included conferences, it included workshops. And that's still the main work that we do.
Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio, 10 a.m. every Monday morning on Community Radio 3CR. Also live streaming on the web and weekly podcasts at 3cr.org.au. So listen in for the very latest bicycle stories, news and views from Melbourne and around the cycling universe. Listen in.
Got a big crop of tomatoes or plums in the garden this summer? look after our precious wildlife and avoid using netting over your veggies and fruit trees. Nets can accidentally trap flying foxes, possums and birds. Many of them don't survive their injuries. If you must use netting, make it safe for wildlife. For more information, go to wildlifevictoria.org.au or call 03 84 00 7300 if you see wildlife trapped in netting. Wildlife Victoria is a 3CR supporter.
This is the Local Food Connection Show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show, and you can go to 3CR Local Food Connections to listen to all of our podcasts. Now you're going to hear more from Maura Gamble in conversation with Helena Norberg Hodge on the need for localization.
Helena, how did you find your voice in that, like come to make films, write books, and you know, you do speak on international stages, you get to connect with people in all levels of society. I mean, what was your journey to be able to be such a vocal spokesperson? I mean, you say you're not recognized, but from my perspective, I feel like, you know, I see that you are one of the most highly recognized people in the localization movement and pioneer in this work, and people do look to you and say, you know, that their understanding of this is as a result of having connection with your analysis of this and to bring forward the understanding of this systemic nature. So how did that happen for you?
Well, it's when I think back of who I was, you know, I do remember that I was a bit of a tomboy and probably quite a strong voice when I was about 10 or something. But then I think that as a young woman, I was not someone who would be getting up and speaking on a stage. I think generally, you know, women tend not to be wanting to stand up on the stage and talk to hundreds or thousands of people. We tend to be much more comfortable in human scale groups because we're actually closer to our indigenous roots. You know, we're more relational. And by the way, all those differences between men and women, which even existed in places like Ladakh, are all very interesting. But I was so impassioned, so it was entirely just, I couldn't stop talking, still can't stop talking, because what I had lived through this, so it wasn't a learned study, it wasn't, oh, I'm going to become an expert. And of course, I wasn't an expert in a narrow field. My expertise became something unique, something that hadn't really existed before. Localization as such hadn't existed. And it was in response. Also, I realized that it was, as I say, it wasn't just Ladakh. It was this experience of living in many different cultures and then later on speaking quite a lot of languages and seeing this pattern of change in every culture that I was familiar with. And I was deeply familiar. I was, you know, connected to the grassroots and, among other things, seeing epidemics of depression among young people in particular growing. I mean, nothing was going to stop me from trying to talk about it on any stage I could get onto, because I was saying, wake up, watch out. We're losing essentially our ability to be human when we're becoming disconnected and now more and more hiding behind a screen because we fear that if we come out face to face, we're not good enough. This robbing people of their deeper sense of self and their sense of confidence is the most hideous, tragic cost of this system. And I feel empowered by knowing that the people who are driving this system do not understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're heading with AI towards handing the world over to about six companies and a few hundred programmers who, with their narrow focus, have no idea that they're helping to increase suicide among adolescents, that they're increasing the poisoning of the atmosphere at every level because they become convinced of a few myths like we have to have more technology to feed the world, probably the biggest, most dangerous myth. And we should remember that technology is chemicals just as much as machinery. And they have to remember that AI, which we think of, you know, as information, is using up water, minerals, mining the world, you know, to gouge out more of nature to replace people. Why would we want to do that? Why on earth? And how anyone can think that that's really going to be improving life on earth? And we soon will, there will be a growing recognition. I'm quite heartened by the number of people now who are actually beginning to really question it. And we need, you know, I would like anyone listening to realize that we can all have a voice, even if we ourselves don't want to speak. We can share the films, we can share the podcasts. And what I have always ended up doing is both the warning about the fear-based anti-nature system. Once you step back, you see very clearly that it comes from a global empire and that the globalizing path, giving global banks and global corporations more power, is the opposite of what will benefit any form of life, because the life-affirming path has to mean supporting something where our transactions, our business, our creation of money, all of it is related to the living world, related to the infinite diversity on this planet. And to bring back that relationship, we need to decentralize or localize. To what degree is a question that needs to be discussed everywhere urgently. But where we can all join in is in saying a no to a speeding up and a scaling up of the path of separation and fear. You know, the path of connection and reconnection is the path of love. And it can sound simplistic, but once we step back and look at it more clearly, it just becomes so obvious and so clear that every human being on this planet would prefer to have those more connected relationships, would prefer to have healthier food and a healthy, diversified farming system. Why is it not happening? And it's mainly because of our ideas. So yeah, that's
really
wonderful you're doing this festival, and I love the terms you brought in, wild and
kind. Oh, great. Thank you. And love, you know, I could have called it a festival of love too.
Love is bandied out about a lot, so I love it. Very, very good.
And you know, as you were speaking about that, you know, I started to wonder, well, what are the ways that we start to tend to this more? I mean, you talk often about a type of different kind of education. So what is that to you, the kind of education that you feel that we need to be tending to bring these ideas forward? I know that, you know, you've had study circles, you've got the film, we've got the podcast, but if you were to invite people here in the audience who are, you know, articulate educators wanting to step out into the world to host more of these things, what are the kind of qualities of the kind of education? Because it's not just like creating a school. There's a different kind of, like, a, you know, Manisha's de-schooling the world, like really thinking about a different kind of education. What does that look like for you? If you were to create, or you have education programs, what do you feel we need to be tending to?
Well, I've always dreamed of having somewhere in the West the sort of center we had in Ladakh, where we ended up working with appropriate technology and in agriculture, and so practical, hands-on things combined with the intellectual. And it's a bit what you've been doing at Crystal Waters, and That combination is what's really valuable. But I would say right now, because of the urgency, the intellectual part can be transmitted online. And what we're trying to teach is showing people how they can also get more involved in a more embodied, localized, practical activities that are both beneficial for the planet, but also educational for them and very beneficial for them. I would also say we are going to have a type of masterclass. It's not a proper masterclass, but I've put together a program of an ongoing journey. So if people are interested in learning what I have to share, we'll soon have that available, a sort of six-week course that they can follow, and we'll be charging very, very little money. We just want to get this out. We do have this World Localization Day program, which you have joined many years now, and that enables people to engage in very often something simple, like maybe organizing a local food feast and gathering friends to simultaneously try to cook food from the local area as much as possible, while also discussing this big picture, which is just still not getting out properly. You know, when people talk about regenerative, they're missing the main systemic need, which is that we need to shorten the distance from the seed to the table in order to have a market that stimulates, that actually demands, pressures the grower to diversify. And that is absolute anathema to the corporate empire, which was built on pushing people off the land and then creating vast monocultures, pressuring any people who were left on the land to become bigger and bigger and bigger to survive, to merge or die. And that meant more chemicals because it's so unnatural. So inevitably, it means more fear, it means more chemicals, whereas if you have a range of things, you know, one hailstorm, one flood, one drought is not going to destroy everything. So the multiple benefits of diversification, which is only really possible in a meaningful way when the distances are shorter, that's the systemic local food economy. It's not about a local farm. Local farms are local wherever they are. We're talking about this systemic shift. So getting familiar with that, spreading the word about it, I would say is one of the single most important things we can do. And I love, you know, being able to see and experience how sometimes in only 2-3 years, barren land can be thriving. Mm-hmm. And that when the people are there, we need more people on the land, the opposite of what we're being told. And the people who are part of that transformation also healing. So we have so many examples of people who were highly depressed or prisoners who were unable to do this, where this beautiful human and planetary healing go together.
You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR. My name's Anne Stanley. Today we've heard from Morag Gamble in conversation with Helena Norberg Hodge. This took place at the recent International Festival of Wild and Kind Ideas run by Morag from the Permaculture Education Institute in Southeast Queensland. The conversation ended a bit abruptly there because that's the first half of it. And if you tune in next week, you'll hear the second half. You can find out all about the Permaculture Education Institute, which offers online courses at thepermacultureinstitute.org. And you can get access to all the conversations that took place at the festival there too. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, please join in with 3CR. If you didn't donate to the Radiothon during June, you can still donate because we still haven't quite reached the station target of $300,000. So any donation you can make at any time is more than welcome. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You wanna know what you're made from? Look at what you're made from's made from. 'Cause the stuff that we're all made from is the same. that upper crust and maintain that good terrain from whence you came. We've been looking up, we've been messing round, we've been freaking out, but it's time to get down, down, down. Cause we're made up of common ground, can't live without it.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.